Yeah, so we're in some undisclosed location here in London, recording and reporting and broadcasting to you, the listener of Resonance 104.4 FM. This is The Truth About Markets, the show that comes to you every week at this time. This is raw radio. This is the sushi of radio. This is kind of like carpaccio for your brain. It's raw. It's nutritious. It's unfiltered. You can't get it at Tesco. You can't get it down at any other radio station. You can only get it on one radio station, Resonance 104.4 FM. I'm here with Stacey Herbert. We're going to bring her in a moment. She's just getting her bathing suit off. We were taking a crazy love bath just a few moments ago. And as I said, we're in the undisclosed location somewhere in London, broadcasting live to you in London on Resonance 104.4. We're trying to stay one step ahead of the bombers. Thanks to Bush, Blair, and Bin Laden, the Axis of Knuckleheads, they got this whole bombing and spread bet model going. They make the spread bets. They put on the bombs. They make money. Then they use the money to influence politicians to allow them to go make more spread bets against more bombs. It's a whole money-making scheme they got going on here. We've seen it already for years and years. It's called corruption. It's called crony capitalism. What do you think Exxon's been doing for years? They just bomb and rape and pillage. They make bets that no one's going to try to stop them. The shareholders get rich making these bets, killing people, bombing people, invading countries, killing people. And they use the money to buy politicians to be able to perpetrate the model again and again and again. All we're seeing now is entrepreneurs. These bombers are just entrepreneurs mimicking their heroes at Exxon, mimicking their heroes at Halliburton, mimicking their heroes at Microsoft. These are just idol worshippers. And not only that, but my friend Stacey Herbert and co-pilot and perpetual lover has made the excellent point that to find a precedent in our modern world for these suicide bombers, look no further than Columbine. Look no further than Columbine if you are living in the UK and that name doesn't ring a bell. Columbine, subject of a big movie not too many years ago. High school students in America, they went into school, they blew everybody up, then they blew themselves up. Now, are they terrorists? Are they following an ideology of evil, as Tony Blair would say? Does that mean if Tony Blair was the governor of that state, he'd say we've got to stop this ideology of evil and stop these Columbine student bombers? Well, you never hear that. Because the problems are not religious. The problems are not political. The problem is that the youth around the world feels is sensitized to the fact that the major corporations who are in bed with our government are killing us. They're trying to kill us. And this is the only way they know how to rebel. These are rebellious kids, these bombers on the bus. They want to push back against the major criminals of our time, the major corporations of our time. Now, we can get into the Columbine story a little bit. As Stacey Herbert, my co-radio ingenue, likes to talk about this story, puts it in the context I think it needs to be put in. And later on, I'm going to be talking about the Bob Geldof story, because according to recent news agencies, Reuters, for example, came out with a story just a couple of days ago. And they pointed out the fact that the Live Aid concert, Bob Geldof's concert, was a big failure for a lot of different reasons. Number one, it failed to change the economics of the situation in any substantive way. The aid and trade package is basically just a recycled pastiche of rehash and not terribly meaningful when it gets down to the ground and the lives of actual Africans. The fact that the entertainers involved were able to use the event as a huge money win and money score for their own pockets kind of begs the question, what is the true motivation for these celebrities to get involved in a big event? Is it just because Davos started to be reporting live every year by the major news media and the financial press that suddenly the celebrities suddenly got a conscience? Is it, that's where all the cameras are? Oh, yeah, we have a conscience, too. It's like Sharon Stone going to Davos and pledging $1 million to help poor people, you know, by flashing her big furry muff to the billionaires. A billionaire mufflash. Oh, yeah, I'm Sharon Stone. Here's my billionaire mufflash. Snap, snap, photo, photo. Oh, I'm Bob Geldof. I've got a muff on top of my head. I'm not a woman, but I got a big muff do. You know, flash, flash, flash. So we got Bob actually on the show. Later in the show, we're going to play an interview I had with Bob, Sir Bob, taped earlier this week in our Paris show, in our Paris chalet. So we'll see quite and hear quite plainly that Bob, just the second to, you know, he opens his mouth, he goes into neo-speak gobbledygook. He's listen carefully because the interview gets to the point where he's saying, "Oh yeah, we have no choice. Liberalization is Africa's destiny, and liberalization is just another buzzword for corporate rape and slaughter and faulty business models. And you know, according to Bob, we have no choice. You know, the corporations, they may suck and they may be dangerous in their own countries and they may be killing the environment. We may be dying because of the greedy few. But you know, if a few Africans don't meet this fate, it's worth throwing the entire continent under the bus." It's kind of the reverse of the thing in the Schindler movie, where they said, you know, if you save one person, how does it go again? If one person with a conscience is saved, one person, do you remember what the Schindler's quote, the Schindler's thing?
No, I didn't really watch it.
It's a biblical quote, you know, that if one light can burn. Anyway, it's like the reverse of that. It's like if so many records can be sold in the fewest period of time and over the most text messages and only one African gets a one shot at drinking three pancakes, then it's worth everyone hooking up their microphones. This guy, Kevin Wall, who organized the event, by the way, Live Aid. I know this guy from Los Angeles. He's not the most... He's a bit of a weasel, I'll say that.
You've actually met him?
Yeah, he was going to buy my company, Hollywood Stock Exchange. He's one of those guys, you know, one of those five or six guys out there. Because he organized the first Geldof shindig.
And he made enough money to buy your company. Wow.
He was going
to
buy that company. Well, you know, he's making tons of money. This guy, Kevin Wall, is the true hero of Live 8 because he organized the whole event. He's obviously working for cash. He didn't donate his services, I'm willing to bet. And he made a huge scad load of money. Just like the first Save Starving People event from Bob Geldof made this guy his first fortune. And then he moved into Los Angeles and started to, inviolate his way around into the industry. And this is just another big money raise for him. But I'm looking at Reuters here, and Reuters is saying that The group of eight themselves, when they came out of the event, decided that not much positive momentum had been established. And yet, the celebrity endorsers, Geldof and U2, are saying, "Oh, it's fantastic. We rubbed shoulders with the big men. You know, they let us up in the big house. Us niggers, we got to live in the big house for a couple of hours. So it was a big event. You know, now we're back on the slave plantation. You know, jump down, turn around, pick a bale of CDs at your local CD seller." But we'll listen to Bob quite soon. We got the video clips of Bob in the Big Bob interview. I wanted to touch on this whole notion about corporate jihad against us. That's you and me. Part of the nigger-onomics, where we're just treated like cannon fodder and slave meat to feed the grist of the Fortune 500, the FTSE 100, the Dow Jones. You know, the rich guys who are getting richer, and everyone else is kind of like getting poorer. By the way, how's your house doing out there, London? I see that the house prices in London dropped 1% last month. A lot of you are probably experiencing the joys of negative equity. Yeah, you took out a big mortgage trying to keep up with your neighbor, and you bought a lot of stuff and a new car, new SUV. But wow, house prices can go down too. The property ladder should be called the property chutes and ladders, because sometimes it goes up, sometimes it goes down. So if you think you're in trouble, well, give it 6 months, and then you'll feel true trouble. And then you're going to see mortgage owners blowing themselves up. Suicide mortgage owners walking into Barclays and HSBC with 500,000-pound mortgages strapped to their back. blowing their brains out. Help me. Do you want to comment on this? Columbine thing? Froggy throat? You going to wake up over there? You got frog in your throat.
Well, speaking of 500,000-pound mortgages strapped to your back, that kind of goes with the American Columbine thing, because another thing just happened 2 weeks ago in Snellville, Georgia.
Oh, yeah. Talk to us about that.
Mr. Crutchfield, who is an electrician, found himself with $90,000 in medical debts. You know, this is what happens in America, and this is what's going to happen to you here in the UK when Tony Blair succeeds in completely privatizing all of the NHS. So this guy has $90,000 in medical debt. And remember, in America, they're about to outlaw bankruptcy because apparently people are just recklessly spending, though 50% of bankruptcies are because of medical debts. Well, anyway, this guy had $90,000 in medical debts, and he was about to lose his house. So he was afraid to be thrown out into the street. So instead, he shoots his postman 7 times. And obviously, the postman is a federal employee, so it's a federal crime. And he was hoping, of course, that the postman would be killed, but the postman survived. The guy, Mr. Crutchfield, with the debts, just drove himself to the police station, turned himself in, and said, "Please put me in jail." And when the case was just before a judge last week, and he asked for 2 life sentences. By the way, he was inspired by the Atlanta Olympics bomber. Remember that guy?
Oh, yeah.
Who got 4 life sentences. So this inspired him to commit a crime so that he would be thrown in jail and saved from the outside world of America.
Yeah, well, suicide is the answer for more and more people, because you got, as you point out, the economics in America is so screwed up. And, you know, it's amazing that you've got Gordon Brown lecturing Germany and France about how they should open up their economies to be more like Britain and America, whereas in these countries you don't find suicide mailmen, suicide killers, suicide Columbine killers, which is a direct outgrowth of suicide economics, making money on suicide, making money on death, making money on murder, making money on the defense contractors, making money on selling drugs to people who don't need drugs, making money on pushing alcohol on your youth so they vomit on the street and vomit on each other, and, you know, they're so fat in the UK they can't even reproduce. That's going to be a demographic problem at some point. You know, here you got Gordon Brown over in France, you know, lecturing the French about the beauty of the British way of doing business. And, you know, it's like Jack the Ripper at, you know, lecturing, you know, or I should say Dracula lecturing the Red Cross on how to run a blood bank. You know, it's like it's not a good mix. You know, you don't want this guy in your economy. We go to Paris every week, and we tell people in France, if Gordon Brown shows up at your doorstep, you're in trouble. You're in deep trouble. He's a big fat guy with a funny jaw that kind of swings back and forth when he speaks. If this guy shows up, it means you're in deep, deep dog-do. Yeah. Run in the other direction. This guy's trouble.
The TMJ, yes. But, yeah, but this is also, you know, equating. It's what's the difference between Columbine and the London bombings? The motivation is the same. They seem to have been doing it because, well, 2 things. They wanted glory and fame, because they both leave, well, we don't know about the London bombers, but we know that the Columbine killers, they left behind videos of themselves planning the killings.
Yeah, these guys know that there'll be videos of them. There's CCTV cameras. You think CCTV cameras, which is Charles Clark's answer to put more cameras in, it only encourages people to get shot on CCTV camera before they blow each other up. It's a fame thing, you jack diddly scoot.
I hadn't even thought of that.
Face.
Yeah. Oh, wow. So so they leave behind, they want glory, right? And the other thing is they're both, everybody says, oh, you know, but these guys aren't impoverished. Because they're not poor. Both sets of bombers, of killers, were middle class. But obviously, you know, we're defining, just like GDP growth, impoverishment in the wrong way. Because obviously these people felt impoverished.
That's right.
When they looked around them.
That's right. We're all impoverished. We're all niggers living on this new corporate farm. These guys are impoverished. If you're listening to me right now, you're impoverished. The ecology... we're living beyond our ecological means. You know this in counties all over the Britain. They're flooding. Due to climate change and global warming. We're all ecologically impoverished. And these kids, because they're sensitive, whether they blow up a bus or blow up a high school, instinctually they know we're all deadly impoverished. And just because they're not stupid, fat, and taking drugs, they'd rather kill themselves having that knowledge and go out truthfully than you know, becoming an adult mortgage bankers and Prozac poppers and Viagra, you know, jump pole vaulters. And living a complete lie. At least they're dying with some modicum of truth.
But also, you know, remember Bowling for Columbine, which Michael Moore did, also connected these Columbine killers to this London bombing, because that's where they make the bombs that they drop from 30,000 feet in the air onto Iraq.
Yeah, you know, I think we just kind of stumbled on a good point here about the CCTV cameras, because we hadn't talked about that before.
No, no.
You know, I remember the second plane that hit the towers in New York. Obviously, there's this notion. They didn't get the first plane, did they?
No.
But the second plane, of course, they got. And there's this school of thought that believes that part of the reason there was the second plane and there was that delay was to make sure that the world's media was poised and pointed on that second plane happening to get all the free publicity. And this is what bears direct responsibility to the media. Let's say you got like Murdoch. Okay, you know, a guy like Murdoch has more blood on his hands than Bin Laden will ever have in 1,000 lifetimes, because he promotes this kind of celebrity worship at the expense of real news. So the people are impoverished who read Murdoch's newspapers. They're impoverished because they don't read actual news. They read about, you know, celebrity anal sex, you know, or some chick has a mole on her forehead or a bleeding sore on her foot. You know, meanwhile, they're not being told that there's actual trouble with the policies that are people by the government put in place by the people who is selling out their assets underneath them. And as a result, you've got these wave of suicide bombers, and the media bears direct responsibility. And the media, of course, you know, Lord Saatchi takes a big role, and he's an advertiser and a PR guru and somebody who manipulates the art market routinely. You know, he likes to put his weight behind one candidate or the other. And, you know, you get back to the same inevitable conclusion that these guys are manipulating the markets, manipulating the media for personal gain. They're greedy, and everyone's getting killed now. The environment is blowing up. You got suicide bombers who are just responding, really, to the corporate jihad against the life, liberty, and any kind of pursuit of happiness. And let me point your attention to this story, which is in America, the FDA, the Federal Drug Administration, has okayed a brain stimulator for the deeply depressed. Okay, this is like a heart pace monitor, you know, that people would put
pacemaker.
Keep their heart beating.
Uh-huh.
Okay, this is a new piece of technology that doctors are implanting in people from a company called Cyberonics, Inc. It's called the vagus nerve stimulator. Or if you're living in Nevada, the vagus nerve stimulator, or VNS. And, you know, they implant this piece of hardware into your body, and every time you feel a little depression coming on, like every time you see Charles Clark get in the House of Commons and make an ass of himself, making some foolhardy claim that more CCTV cameras are going to stop suicide bombers, or that ID cards are going to stop suicide bombers, instead of padding the pockets of the IT companies and the people who make the CCTV systems. How come I keep saying CCTV? There's three C's. C2TV, CCTV.
CCCP.
Once I start going down the CCC, I can't stop. I'm like, CCCCCCC.
But I like it. But you have proven, we unveiled this on The Truth About Markets, that it's going to encourage them because they become famous.
They become famous when they get a faster trip to heaven.
We know Murdoch is probably behind this. Because, you know,
they love... images for his newspaper.
Yeah.
So this FDA, they got the brain stimulator for the deeply depressed that they've approved. This new piece of hardware that people can implant. So every time you see Charles Clark, or Tony Blair lying about the motivation for war, if you see Tony Blair lying to the public in the House of Commons that he didn't cut a deal with Bush to get him on some CEO of a corporate, you know, Fortune 500 company in America once they throw him out of the House of Commons, or every time you see Gordon Brown lying about the figures. You see, you know, Bush lying about his energy policies that were written by the oil companies to pad the pockets of the insiders at those companies. Every time you see one of these liars on TV and you start getting depressed, instead of maybe voting for somebody else or doing what really should be done, which is to grab your rifle, run down to Washington, and demand a regime change. You just hit the vagus nerve stimulator, the VNS.
So they implant this electrical device into your brain. Now, what's to say that they're not going to get somebody like Harrah's, you know, the casino or Visa,
yeah,
to give, like, to say, oh, actually, put the little stimulator in the spend on my credit card region.
Well, that's a good point, and it's been proven recently that they've developed through the biotechnology industry new scents and smells that stimulate people to bet. And I think we talked about it on this show last week, didn't we?
Yeah, the Parkinson's drug that actually encourages people to go on, they become addicted to gambling.
Yeah, I think we talked about it on last week's show, didn't we?
Yes, we did, honey. We did.
So they've got you going to Vegas, and they fill the air with this smell that makes you gamble yourself to death. So the insiders at Harrah's and these other casinos would get rich.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's a suicide gambler. So they're promoting suicide gambling. So suicide bombing is promoted. It's a huge GDP boost. And this is what France and Germany want to keep out.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want this type of suicide for profits. So anyway, finishing up here with the vagus nerve stimulator. Let me just clear up exactly how the thing works. It's a generator the size of a pocket watch. It's implanted into the chest. Wires snake up the neck to the vagus nerve, delivering tiny electric shocks through that nerve and into the region of the brain thought to play a role in mood. Now, it's thought to play a role. Not that they would be precise about something like this. You know, it's in the general area. It's a mood region. You know, we're going to stick a little electrical shock up there every time Charles Clark comes on TV and says some stupid stuff.
But you know that, especially Americans, and now I guess more and more so British people, they're willing to put anything in their body instead of dealing with the source of the issue. So, for example, like all those obese Americans, rather than stop eating processed food, mm-hmm. they go and get like their stomachs clamped, and like, you know, it's just bizarre what they, rather than just stop eating so much.
I'm going to have one of these put in. It's going to be the vaginal nerve stimulator, because, you know, I'm trying to have a vagina implanted now because I'm tired of being a man.
Uh-huh.
And I'm going to have it hooked up to my clitoris, my virtual clitoris. And
before you even get the clitoris inserted.
Yeah, my virtual one. My anticipatory clitoris. The one I'm thinking about getting. I'm shopping for one right now on the web.
Uh-huh.
On eBay. Used clitorises. And I got a nice
one. I'm sure they have it.
See, Sharon Stone wants to sell her clitoris because she's strapping on a dick now. She wants to be a man. So she's selling her clitoris on eBay.
Uh-huh.
I'm going the other way. I'm selling my dick. I'm buying a clitoris.
Okay.
I had enough of being a man. It's too horrible. I don't want to be associated with my gender. I'm ashamed of my gender.
The dick market, though, is crashing. If you look on eBay, I mean, you can't even get a few pennies for
it. Well, thus, Viagra. It's market manipulation, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, trying to get some dick prices higher. Ow! That actually just gave me a woody. So, I think the drug's already working. They're probably pumping this room full of whatever it is. We're a test market. You know, they test these drugs on people, and uh-huh. they don't even know it.
That's why
animal rights activists, I support them. I don't support the fact that they're, you know, doing arson or hurting people. No, of course not. But I support their cause
mm-hmm.
because the drug manufacturers, they test on animals. They're going to be tested on humans. They test on humans all the time. You know, they're testing stuff all the time. Because who's going to tell them not to? The government? They work for the corporations. The people? They're on drugs. They're going to get into somebody new in office? You know, so you got I don't know, UN.
Okay.
What are you working on?
Okay. What am I working on? What story? Well, I was thinking that, we're talking about suicide bombers on the London Underground, but this story just out this week that the a Europe-wide investigation by the National Audit Office found that British consumers of rail services are basically suicide consumers, because the report warns that the situation in Britain is that the rail stations are dirty and a haven for thieves. And what they found was that, where is this? The biggest stations, The rail stations, the privatized rail stations, rail services are not investing because there was no value for money. Rail industry cannot afford or justify spending because of value for money. The Strategic Rail Authority originally envisaged spending $225 million on new facilities throughout Britain at the rail stations, at 980 stations, but shrank the program to $25 million, so just like 10% of their original estimates. So more support from the private sector was needed, but train operators on short leases meant it was not worth their while investing. So we like you're going there and you're confronted by crime and disease and disaster for profit. What's the difference?
The contractors are suicide bombers. So are the suicide bombers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, let's get into this Bob Geldof thing because this whole idea of value for money, which is a phrase you hear all the time in the UK, that they need to get value for money. But the definition of value is unsustainable in the bigger picture in terms of the environment and in terms of society at large, because it generally means killing off the species. You know, like, for example, after the suicide bombings, the Columbine suicide-esque bombings in London, bookings were down 10% at Ryanair.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's good, because Ryanair is one of the biggest eco-criminals in the world. They're an eco-terrorist. They're spewing so much carbon into the atmosphere every day that this guy who runs, Michael O'Leary, should be hung up by his thumbs and beaten to within an inch of his life.
Oh, he'd like that. He's Irish. Bay. Yeah.
Oh, he's Irish. He probably loves that.
He and Bob Geldof probably.
They'd love to
like
get
tie each other up and spank
their,
each other.
Hoops. They love that. Open it up wide with some Guinness down there. Yeah, forget about all the racial epithets for a second. This guy's an idiot, Michael O'Leary, because he's a carbon terrorist. He's an eco-terrorist. His bookings were down 10%, but, after the bombs, he came out with an ad saying, we're going to fight. He started quoting Churchill. We're going to fight. Mm-hmm, instead of saying we're going to fight them here and fight them there, he's going, we're going to fly them here and fly them there. Yeah, we're going to fly them down to Spain so they can throw up on Spaniards and just drink all their water and ruin their real estate market.
Mm-hmm.
And
by the way, Spain is like undergoing the worst drought ever in their history. 14 firefighters died this week. Everybody's dying there because of in order to make golf courses for British people.
Yeah, thanks, Michael O'Leary. The Spanish people love you. You're fucking burning them down.
But they have the highest GDP growth in the EU. So exactly. It's worth it, maybe.
So GDP growth. So Charles Clark and Gordon Brown and Tony Blair will say, you see, everyone's dying from forest fires. That's what we want. That's our goal.
Exactly. Well, apparently.
Boost. In Vegas and Nevada and the United States, they're on fire due to climate change and global warming. And everyone's saying, yeah, well, this is the model that Europe should adopt, the neoliberal model, which is just a slang for we're going to burn you for our money bag. But anyway, the thing about this Bob Geldof interview that I thought was interesting is that I ask Bob, I say, you're trying to get these, this, what he calls liberalization, or you're trying to get economics into Africa that's sponsored by the very corporations that have been sponsoring colonialism for 500 years, except that now they've got nicer brands.
Mm-hmm.
They don't look like they're actually just slave mastering, money laundering, drug toting, gun, firing lunatics. But I say, these companies, they're not acting responsible in their own countries, in America and the UK. So why would we expect them to act responsibly in Africa? Why are we making it easier for them to go to Africa? And I think what you'll hear and what he's saying is that, well, yeah, I agree with you. There's a lot of problems, but, we got to save at least one African, we got to save one. If it means destroying the entire continent to save one, then it's worth it, which is the reverse of this Schindler List quote, which I'm going to have to grab. While this is playing, I'm going to try to dredge my brain to get my metaphor correct on that one, because I have to ask my producer and my editor and my makeup person and my entourage.
You have a makeup person for radio?
In the trailer. I'm going to ask my trailer people about this, because it's racking my brains. Get Spielberg on the phone.
Okay.
Get Spielberg on the phone.
I could find any phone number.
Oh, that's right. We got this Bob's...
Mobile phone number. We can't say where our secret source is from.
We kind of jumped on them with this, and we'll play it right now.
Hello.
Hey, Bob.
Yeah.
Hey, it's Max Kaiser at Paris Live Radio in Paris. How are you?
Okay. okay. How are you, Max?
Very good. Congratulations on the Live 8 show.
Thank you very much, dude.
Hey, just wanted to ask you a question here. There's a lot of reports coming out around the world suggesting that Live 8, actually, when you figure that it supported the business corporations going into Africa, ends up doing more harm than good because you're simply giving these guys a free pass to bring in their economies into Africa and to perpetuate the same problem.
No, is the quick answer, but I haven't heard that. And anyway, is this an interview? Are we on air?
Yeah, we're on air right now, Bob.
Oh, okay. No, I would disagree with that. What we're trying to do is to ensure that first these sort of sickening economies, or sick economies, get free of the debt burden, one, first. Secondly, that their economies get prime pumped, two. And thirdly, then, that they can trade out of misery into a healthier financial life. But that is totally conditional on the fact that they can produce stuff and trade that stuff, and equally that their governments allow them to do, that there isn't bad government. So it's a four-deal package. It's debt, trade, aid, and governance, and that's the only way. There isn't a plan B, really, and it's not Geldof's plan. It's what most of the economists and philosophers, businessmen, intellectuals, and politicians think may work. Plan B, there isn't one. Plan B is we continue to watch them die in huge numbers, and that's frankly unacceptable.
Well, a couple of points. There might be a plan B, but in terms of what you're talking about, the conditions that are the corporations to and the governments to start working in Africa, per what came out of the G8, it doesn't do anything to stop these corporations who are creating economic imbalances even in their home countries. I mean, these corporations, these American corporations, why should they be allowed to operate in Africa when they their behavior in their own country is leading to wealth and income gaps, escalating violence, escalating unemployment? What suggests that even if they go to Africa, they're going to behave any better? Why should we let these companies into Africa? Why are they going to? They're not behaving any better.
Well, if you stop asking the same question five times, I can answer it. For a start off, it should be a free world. So, but where I agree with you is that enforced economic liberalization is a joke. It just rapes very vulnerable economies and therefore kills more people. So if you look at the G8 paragraph 31, you'll see that the G8 agreed that there should not be enforced liberalization of economies. That means that in order for them to get debt relief or to get aid, that we won't force them to open up their markets to Western companies, and that they will be able to grow at their own rate and at the way they decide to grow. So I think that answers your question.
Well, okay, we're going to have to agree to disagree on that because...
Hold on, do you agree that there shouldn't be enforced liberalization or not?
I think that there is a plan A.
No, hold on.
I think the plan A is that the corporations themselves can be addressed their own policies and how they conduct their business in such a way as that they're not free to...
Stop talking your opinion and answer the question, the answer I gave you. Do you agree that there should be enforced liberalization of vulnerable economies?
No.
Okay, then we agree. You don't agree to differ with me. We agree. So next question.
But how can you give these guys an open rein into African countries with their model, which is a model that doesn't work?
Max, do you understand what I'm saying to you? Enforced liberalization means that you do give them open rein if that has been stopped.
But why would we trust them to give them any kind of freedom in this situation if they don't do it in their own countries? The models don't support it. Why? You're saying they're going to change stripes and suddenly they're going to have a different model?
But if the vulnerable economies don't allow those people in. In other words, if they're not forced to accept them, then they don't have to have them in. Now, I would take your point that if there's lousy government in those vulnerable economies, which is one of the reasons why they are vulnerable, they probably will let them in if they're getting backhanders and bribes. That has to stop. So we also have a publish what you pay law in Europe, which hopefully will extend into America, so that big corporations, especially the oil guys or the mineral guys or the resources guys, when they go into a country, they must publish publicly what it is they pay, what it is they receive, and what it is how they disperse their money. That hopefully will stop some of the corruption and some of the, as I say, rape of these vulnerable economies. You know, Mobutu, the tyrant of Zaire, who said it takes two to corrupt, the corrupted and the corrupter. So listen, Max, I do agree with you a lot of what I'm saying. I think you're a little hysterical about one of the issues, but in theory it should balance out. And I accept it's only in theory, but plan B, as I say, is that they continue dying. So I've spent enough time with you now, but thanks very much.
All right, Bob. Bye. Thanks.
Okay, you're listening to Resonance 104.4 FM in London. And this is the Truth About Market show. And we just heard Bob Geldof. Yes, Bob Geldof. Sir Bob Geldof talking about the Live Aid show. And first of all, you know, he's basically full of crap because he lies right at the top of the interview. There's been a huge firestorm of criticism for this event. I'm looking at this Reuters news story. It says 2 weeks after Bob Geldof assembled the greatest rock and roll lineup ever to pressure world leaders to alleviate poverty, people are questioning whether musicians and celebrities should do anything other than entertain. A great justice has been done, said Geldof. At the same time, ActionAid gave a less positive spin on the committee. The summit has failed to deliver justice for Africa. Aid groups also are frustrated at what they see as celebrities' tendency to oversimplify issues. Now, here's an interesting comment to oversimplify issues, because it looks like to me that he's actually overcomplicated the issues. He's bringing in vulnerability, trying to differentiate one vulnerable country versus another vulnerable country. He's got the forced liberalization attack, whether this is the correct formula for these G8 nations to go in there to fine-tune the African economy. You know, the fact is that these countries and these companies and these world leaders are representative of a model of doing business that is a failure at home, as I pointed out to Bob, Sir Bob. There's no reason to believe it's not going to be a failure in Africa. When you start to throw in the towel and say, well, yeah, they suck, but maybe one person won't get destroyed as a result of having these companies and countries involved, you know, you're basically condemning the entire globe to premature human extinction at the hands of these corporations. Make Poverty History, the charity umbrella group, which works closely with Geldof, it goes on to say in this Reuters article, argued the G8 debt deal was a tenth of the amount needed, and less than half the promised aid increase was with new money. ActionAid also called the outcome of trade issues allowing poor countries to compete easier on world markets a disaster for Africa, where 60% of the employment comes from small-scale farming. Yeah, and that doesn't work. As we know, famously, Bob Geldof was praising America for dumping corn into the African continent. He stood in front of a big dumped corn pallet saying, oh, George Bush had done more for Africa than any president before him. Meanwhile, this is dumped corn, which means that the price of corn in the local economy is crashing, and this is going to cause a lot of Africans to go out of business, if not starve. So, you know, Reuters makes a good point here. Just because you're a celebrity and you make lots of money doesn't mean you have any idea how the economy works. You know, having lots of money doesn't mean you're an economist. And I think this is the mistake a lot of people make. Like, oh, he's rich, he must know how money works. You know, that doesn't work at all. That doesn't jive at all. And the subtleties involved here in the doublespeak and the obfuscation that you get from these G8 countries is being picked up by these mimics, these puppets, these clowns like a Geldof or a Bono, and mouthed to all these screaming fans who are buying the records. That's all they really care about. And it just perpetrates a faulty model. And I let his words speak for themselves. And as further evidence that this model is out of control, it's not even just confined to the planet Earth. We find that some of the space probes that have landed on Mars recently have brought microbes from the U.S. and other countries from on Earth to Mars. You know, this infectious model of destroying what it is you're trying to take care of, the Frankenstein model. Remember the Frankenstein movie where he's trying to pick up the little girl and kills her? This is the U.S. embrace of Africa. You know, they're going to give Africa a big hug and in the process kill it. You know, let's go explore Mars. You know, we love Mars. We love space program. Oh, we just left behind some viruses and some bugs. You know, let's give the private contractors the job of cleaning up the hospital. They'll give it a big warm embrace and leave MSRI or MSRA bug.
MRSA, yes.
Yeah, let's give them the bug. We love them so much we're going to kill people with our virus. So the model doesn't work. Geldof would, you know, do everyone a great service if he came out and said, you know what, the model doesn't work. These guys are crooks. And, you know, support what we've said many times on our various shows. Support this initiative. And I read about it in the Guardian newspaper. Let Africans create a coffee cartel. Coffee is the second most highly traded commodity in the world. You know, most people's lives can't work without coffee. I know mine can't. And Africans generate and produce a bulk of the world's coffee. Let them create a cartel. Let them fight fire with fire. They don't need these U.S. corporations moving in there, bypassing all the local governments as they do in places like Somalia or Coca-Cola. There's not even a government in Somalia. Coca-Cola is running a huge bottling operation and a huge Coke syrup operation in there. They don't need these U.S. companies moving into Africa and simply bringing in the more colonialism and more rape and pillage of the local economy. Give the Africans a way to fight back with the same tools that the U.S. corporations have. Let them create a cartel. Let them create a coffee cartel and let them get the price benefit from having a virtual monopoly or part of the oligopoly on coffee prices. This is what Geldof should be supporting. He should have a Live 8 to support African coffee cartel. You know, but no corporate sponsor is ever going to let him get away with that. No, Murdoch wouldn't talk about it in his newspapers. No phone company would allow him to do instant tickets over their phone service. No major network would cover that event. And he would have absolutely no sponsorship on the corporate level whatsoever. People would vilify him, say he's a loony left, say he's crazy. Take away his OBE. He'd be left singing that, I hate Mondays at a pub somewhere in Ipswich or Dipshits, whatever the name of that town is. There'd be Bob Geldof singing I Hate Mondays because nobody would talk to him because he actually supported a program that would help Africa, not rape Africa. The guy's an African rapist. I mean, just like Exxon, just like IBM, just like Coca-Cola, and just like those guys, he's getting a raise in pay. Everyone's getting a raise in pay. Everyone's making money, except the Africans. And, Bob, if you want to debate me on this point more, you know where to find me. Just reach me on the internet through the web, Max Keiser, K-E-I-S-E-R, the ratings riser. Wherever I go, ratings go higher. And that's the way we do it on this show. You know, in the old days, when you had tin cans and string, before you had a modern equipment like you find here at Resonance FM, some of the stuff is actually manufactured during the Eisenhower period, but it's still kicking. It's still strong. You can see people scribbling their names and initials in some of this equipment. Here's one here it is. Here's his name. It says right here, scribbled Lord Snooty Puss. Now, what's that guy's name? Lord the Big Gambler, the missing guy down in the Côte d'Azur? Lord
Lucan?
Lucan, yeah, he was here. Lord Lucan was here.
He was.
So, now the BBC. So, anyway, I think we finished enough with Bob Geldof. I mean, the point with Bob is he's kind of an idiot. But I tell you who I like is Ken Livingstone. Okay, Ken Livingston, the mayor of London, is laying blame for the dead people on the bus and the train on the doorstep of Tony and George, where it belongs. Mm-hmm. You know, he's come out and said, look, the policies in the United States and Britain are such where you've created a generation of disenfranchised and disillusioned because you've given all the power to the greedy people,
mm-hmm.
is what we've said on this show.
Yeah.
He goes on to say something which shouldn't be a shock to anybody, which is that, the U.S. should tell Israel to pull out of Palestine. Mm-hmm. Because by supporting Israel's murder and mayhem in Palestine, you're just, infuriating the Arab community and the Muslim community around the world. And we live in a time and a place called planet Earth where it doesn't take much to go into a subway or a metro and disrupt things, kill people.
Mm-hmm. I like how he Ken Livingston also said that when America was dealing with Osama bin Laden during the Afghanistan war, he was just another businessman. They treated him as just another businessman.
Yeah, speaking of business, the BBC edits out the word terrorist. The BBC has re-edited some of its coverage of the London Underground and bus bombings to avoid labeling the perpetrators as terrorists, it disclosed. Early reporting of the attacks on the BBC's website spoke of terrorists, but the same coverage was changed to describe the attack simply as businessmen. No, I'm joking.
I know you.
But they should just call these guys businessmen, because basically whether they're working in the city or they're manipulating the young folks around the world to act out with guns and bombs, it's all about business. And Senator Hillary Clinton in America, wife of former President Bill Clinton, has made a good point. She's getting all excited about this company called Rockstar Games, the maker of Grand Theft Auto. Grand Theft Auto, apparently hit a secret button and all the people committing murder in the game get naked. So now you've got naked people committing murder. And check out what's being said here in this New York Times article. Patricia Vance, president of the Entertainment Software Rating Board, defended the industry's rating system. Grand Theft Auto was rated mature. And she says, you know, it's got the mature rating. And because it contains the five fingers of corrupting young minds so that they go out and slaughter their comrades. Because it contains intense violence, blood and gore, strong sexual content, strong language, and use of drugs. So anyone who's 17 or older is free to play this game, so-called game, mm-hmm. that features intense violence, blood and gore, strong sexual content, strong language, and use of drugs. So I guess when you get to be 22, then you can strap on a bomb and go blow up people. Because that's how, you know, that's the next level of Grand Theft Auto. Grand Theft Auto, the suicide bomber. You know, this is coming soon from Rockstar Games. Because there's no differentiation placed by these corporations on anybody's lives with this virtual murder, you know, analog murder. They're all getting paid. They're all going to get paydays. The bus manufacturers get a new contract to build more buses. The private contractors who own the subway system, the tube station, are getting more contracts to rebuild mm-hmm. the tube station. They say, hey, it's the greatest thing that ever happened to us. We're making more money. The Adam Smith Institute in Washington, D.C., after the tsunami disaster, they said it's great. You know, the region needed an economic boost. Now that the tsunami has killed 200,000 people, we can get to work rebuilding the region. This was coming out of a think tank in Washington, D.C. The Adam Smith Institute said this publicly, that they thought it was great. And then furthermore, that it's too bad that the Luftwaffe didn't bomb more Britain during World War II, because it would have given the British a chance to totally rebuild, as was the happy opportunity for the Japanese after Hiroshima and Nagasaki.
So Adam Smith Institute was inciting violence. Maybe these guys, you know, these guys were British, these London bombers. Maybe they thought, well, we need a GDP boost because it looks like the economy is going into the stinker.
Yeah, where's Charles Clark with Adam Smith Institute? They're inciting violence.
Yeah.
The Adam Smith Institute is clearly violating everything that Charles Clark is speaking about in the House of Commons as promoting hate speech.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, how come they're not being in the dock? How come they're not being arrested? How come they're not got house orders, you know, Adam Smith Institute? Clearly, they're inciting violence. They're inciting violence all over the world in ways that are gargantuan by comparison. Maybe it's just so big that they can't possibly come up with laws that would fit the crime. You know, that's the problem with the crimes. I mean, the crimes are very narrow cast. They go after, they got the CCTV, the CCTV camera, uh-huh, and they're uh-huh. digging through the data of the computers, and they're trying to find that one guy who's saying the one phrase that's going to create the one problem and the one murder. And they're so focused on that one little minutia that they're missing the big picture, which is that the whole system is geared toward mass slaughter, whether it's Exxon pouring carbon dioxide into the atmosphere, whether it's the private contractors raping the rail system to cause accidents, killing people, whether it's Tesco pushing processed foods, which are provoking obesity and diabetes and straining the NHS system. Those are the mass murderers. Those are your weapons of mass destruction. How come Charles Clark isn't doing anything about those guys? Because he's trained to look at the absolute minutia of the situation. He's like a fly fisherman caught in a hurricane of corporate corruption, and he's there with his little tsetse fly, you know, casting out there trying to hook a trout. Meanwhile, he's being overcome with a tsunami of corruption. You know, he may look tough down there in the House of Commons, like, what does he weigh, 300 pounds? He's like glued to the floor, you know? But yeah. He's a pussycat when it comes to attacking the true criminals.
Yeah. Well, they're allied with the true criminals.
Meanwhile, these hurricanes that are also a direct result of the global warming and climate change, which are sponsored by corporations as GDP boosting, mm-hmm. it's also a great way. It's sponsored by the insurance company. You know, the insurance company, every time there's a major hurricane, they get to raise their premiums, raise the cost of insurance products in ways that are slightly more than what they project to be the amount they have to pay out for a future hurricane.
Mm-hmm.
So every time there's a hurricane, the insurance companies, like Warren Buffett's insurance company, they'll raise the cost of insurance by some formula, which is just a little bit more than what they project to be the actual cost of the next insurance. So it's a sliding scale toward profitability based on mass destruction. You know, the insurance companies love hurricanes. It gives them a great way to pad their pockets. And they do nothing, therefore, to stop the cause of hurricanes, which are the twin problems of global warming and climate change. And, you know, we saw something in the Financial Times just a few days ago that the growth in the catastrophic bonds, or the catastrophe bonds, the cat bonds, which are being swapped back and forth in the banking industry. This gives all the major banks and insurance companies a way to insulate themselves against environmental catastrophe. Instead of trying to get at the root of the problem by trying to figure out, well, maybe we don't need hurricanes due to global warming and climate change. Maybe we don't need eco-disasters due to corporate abuse. Maybe we don't need to rape and pillage Africa with the help of a celebrity non-spokesman singing bad songs from 2 decades ago. Maybe we should actually get down and, with our hands dirty, and fix the core of the problem, which is that the company's model of doing business is faulty. It's flawed. They generate too much garbage. Their garbage is garbageism, as we call it on this show. The United States is by far the worst offender. The UK is one of the worst offenders in the globe. And these companies, they need to have their economics rewired so that they look more like Western Europe. Not the other way around. Western Europe is generating less garbage. Okay, yeah, they also generate less growth. But more importantly, they generate less garbage.
Less growth of garbage. That's what they're saying. That's what is GDP of garbage.
You know, France and Germany should kick some ass and say, look, Britain and the U.S., stop. Take all your bankers that are coming in here every single day. You know, there's a big story in the papers all week long that all these bankers from Britain and the United States are moving into France and Germany to privatize. And you got this big deal now. PepsiCo is buying Danone yogurt.
Oh, wow. I didn't
know that. Yogurt, that's like 20% of the dairy products of the globe are sold by this one company. They also have very popular spring water. Goes by the name of
Perrier.
No, not Perrier. The other one, the flat one, the one without the bubbles.
Evian.
And it's a huge French company. It's PepsiCo is rumored to be buying this huge company. Mm-hmm. And the French people don't want a jihadist, you know, American company coming into their country, stripping the assets, firing lots of people, causing murder and mayhem. You know, despoiling the environment. Like, you don't want the France to become like America, which is like teenagers gun-toting, methamphetamine-popping, irresponsible, you know, serial masturbators sitting in front of their TV screens watching videos of their parents, you know, having threesomes with the neighbor's dog, you know, as a GDP boost.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is what America is all about. You don't want that happening in France.
Yeah.
The French are right to fight back.
Mm-hmm. Especially water supplies. I think that's going to be the next scary thing.
Well, you see, in Spain, certainly. You know, and of course, the soft drink companies like PepsiCo, they would love it if the water runs out because they'd like to sell the water.
Uh-huh.
It's another part of the public domain that's being repackaged and sold and charged a premium for it. You know, and I doubt that the regulators will be able to come forward with their initiative that's been stated recently to put a warning label on these soft drinks.
Mm-hmm.
Like Coke and Pepsi. The American CSPI, which is an agency that covers public interest, the Center for Science and the Public Interest, would like to put warning labels on Coke and Pepsi to warn people that these substances create obesity. In Coca-Cola, every can of Coke has 39 grams of sugar, the equivalent to 10 teaspoons, for example, according to the Financial Times. And the soft drink producers say, well, you know, our response to that is we're going to sell smaller cans of Coke, smaller servings.
Okay, rather than just putting less sugar in?
Who came up with this, Bob Geldof? So, you know, that's like saying to a heroin addict, well, I'm not going to sell you a gram of heroin. I'm going to sell you half a gram of heroin. And mm-hmm. the heroin addict's supposed to say, oh, that's okay. That's fine. I don't need the full gram. I'll get off on a half a gram.
Mm-hmm.
No, that's not the way it works. It's not the package size in question. It's the percentage of sugar per, you know, fluid ounce of obesity-provoking, dangerous, toxic substance that we're talking about. But again, using Bob Geldof mathematics, which are like make no sense, the Coca-Cola will say, well, we're not going to reduce the sugar in our product. We're going to reduce the serving size. Not only is that stupid, but it also creates more waste because now you've got more tin, more aluminum per that saved 12 ounce of Coke. So instead of having a certain amount of tin and coke, which it's very environmentally scary the way the amount of material that goes into producing a ton of aluminum is one of the most ecologically devastating processes known to mankind.
Is this making these cans of Coke.
Yeah, making the cans.
Yeah.
So because Pepsi or Coke doesn't have to pay for that damage that they're doing, they don't have to pay for this damage. The government gives them a free ride because they own the government. So they say simply, oh, you got a problem with the fact that kids are blowing up like big ducks on a foie gras farm drinking our sugar-laden crap? Well, what we're going to do is we're going to actually solve the problem by taking advantage of the fact that we don't have to pay at all for the aluminum mining smelters that we're using also to rape the globe. And we're going to increase more aluminum. We're going to make the cans smaller. We're going to do more cans.
Mm-hmm.
You see? It's almost like a torture situation. It's like torture. We're being tortured by these companies. Like, if you go to Pepsi and you say, you know, stop killing the planet, you rapist. They say, oh, yeah, we'll take this. And they just get a bigger dildo. And they just rape you harder. So it's almost like people are afraid to challenge the corporations because the corporations just come back with a bigger studded dildo and do anal sex in a more hellacious manner. So it's like you don't even want to open that hornet's nest. And, you know, I think this is what we saw in Iraq, is that the U.S. thought that they could go with impunity into Iraq, steal all the money, and walk away. And they got a taste of their own medicine. This is what Iraq is. This is... You want to know what it's like living under America's thumb? This is what Iraq has had to live with for years and years. Now we've got reversal. America has a taste of its own medicine. These bombs in London, it's a taste of Tony Blair's own medicine. There's still a vast disproportionate numbers between the 25,000 civilians that have been murdered in Iraq and the 50 or so civilians dead the other day. I mean, that leaves tens of thousands yet to die in the UK before you see any kind of parity. I hate to break it down so bluntly, but there, as Tony Blair keeps telling us, there's a war going on. So we'll see how that works out. Next week on this show, The Truth About Markets, we've got hopefully another exciting guest. We've got our insider supplying us with secret cell phone numbers. And I think that's just about all the time we have, maybe 30 seconds. Any last words on this show?
And look forward to Congressman from Colorado, from your allied partner, Tom Tancredo, said that America should bomb Mecca.
That was his suggestion?
That's this week's suggestion coming out of America. So
well, we'll have plenty to talk about then if America bombs Mecca.
So let's ask the 2 million British Muslims what they think of this.
All right, then. Well, until next week, we'll see you at that time. Bye, y'all.